grief. Reporters from the press bus banged through the double doors of the Dallas Trademart, desperate to know why the motorcade had left them. Finding no clues in the blank stares of the 2,000 waiting guests at the presidential fundraiser, one of them called the New York Hearst office and shouted, "Parkland Hospital," in a tone that drove them all back through the banquet hall. The Herald Tribune correspondent bowled over a waiter carrying a tray of vegetable dishes and ran on without a backward glance. Outside the hospital, a disembodied radio voice announced, "The President of the United States is dead," just as Tom Wicker of the New York Times ran by Lyndon Johnson's limousine convertible, parked askew. Not far away, a hovering cloud of Secret Service agents shoved Johnson at a trot into three unmarked police cars and lurched off for the airport amid clashing orders about how to avoid follow-up assassins. Some agents shouted for more speed through the red lights, others for fewer sirens and motorcycle escorts so as not to attract attention. The Johnsons boarded Air Force One just ahead of Judge Hughes, who administered the presidential oath barely 2 hours after the rifle shots. And the jet roared off for Washington above a carload of reporters giving chase. Before dawn on Saturday, November 23rd, President Kennedy's body arrived at the White House from overnight autopsy at the Naval Medical Center and was placed under military honor guard in the East Room. As Johnson's first business call of that morning, J. Edgar Hoover attempted to correct panicky errors of the previous day when he had reported the murder weapon as a Winchester and a Secret Service agent among the victims. By now, FBI teams had traced the Mannlicher Carcano rifle found in the Texas School Book Depository from the manufacturer through a Chicago sporting goods dealer to a mail-order buyer under the name A.J. Hiddell, whose receiving post office box in Dallas had been rented by Lee H. Oswald, the suspect under custody. Agents were rushing ballistics and fingerprints among 1,000 details. But even Hoover confessed perplexity when Johnson asked about intelligence reports that suspect Oswald, a former expatriate to the Soviet Union, had visited the Soviet embassy in Mexico City 2 months earlier. "That's one angle that's very confusing," Hoover told Johnson. The next morning, Sunday, November 24th, as Blackjack, the riderless funeral horse, escorted the casket to public viewing in the Capitol Rotunda, Johnson attended services at St. Mark's Episcopal Church nearby on Capitol Hill. The Reverend Bill Baxter urged his congregation not to forget that the shock of the assassination had dissolved the callous, selfish divisions of ordinary life, revealing them as insignificant against the shared bonds beneath. Visibly moved, Johnson covered his face with his handkerchief during the hymn, "America the Beautiful." Afterward, he walked spontaneously into the parish hall to shake hands, seeming to find relief in the contact. His Secret Service detail, already agitated by this first public outing since Dallas, roughly challenged more than a few churchgoers and practically dragged Johnson into his car minutes before a voice cried out in the street, "Jesus Christ, they've shot Oswald." Millions of NBC viewers had just witnessed the first murder ever broadcast on live television.